Adventurous Audio. From idea to ear, we make audio an adventure. Well, this is a bonus episode for you where we're going to walk you through the virtual reality technology which is being developed at the Levy Hume Research Centre for Forensic Science at the University of Dundee.
I'm Vincenzo Rinaldi. I'm a VR-AR application specialist. VR and AR stand for virtual reality and augmented reality. And I'm working here at the Levy Hume Research Centre for Forensic Science. I'm working on the application of virtual reality and acquisition methods, 3D acquisition methods, in forensic science, which means potentially taking the crime scene to the investigators through a 3D reconstruction for several purposes, like, for example, training, investigative purposes, and so on.
And what kind of difference do you think this kind of technology would make to a jury?
The courtroom is an interesting use case for us. The people that have a role in the courtroom actually have to potentially read hundreds or thousands of lines of written reports, look at hundreds of photographs to understand what happened at the scene, or at least the events that were reconstructed by the investigators. And they're usually returned with a fragmented view of the scene. This is something that happens not for short times. Court trials might go on for months, for years. So if you have a role in the courtroom, you are required to not only learn a huge amount of information, but also to retain all this information, which is a huge task, extremely taxing for anyone. So one thing that might help is actually a better understanding, a better spatial understanding of the scene and how every piece of evidence is related to the space where they were found. It might also, and this has been proved already through academic research, help retention and memory recall, which translates into better understanding, but also better memorization of the information that are provided to the people that are working at the courtroom, which eventually might lead to fairer outcomes from the courtroom.
So what have we got here, Vincenzo?
We have here a headset, a VR headset, which is a standalone device which doesn't require any big computer. It's basically a smartphone with two lenses. Okay. And through these two lenses we can use what it's called stereoscopy to have two images, two different images shown, one to the left eye, one to the right eye, and this gives us the illusion of depth. So using this we can virtually have a walk around of a 3D reconstructed scene.
So is that what we're going to do? Have a walk around of a 3D
absolutely.
Scene? Fantastic. So, okay, so here's the headset. So talk me through what I need to do.
So you just secure the strap.
So I've just popped the headset on and suddenly I'm in a room where there's been a fire. To my left, there's windows, there's a radiator, some chairs that have been burnt out. There's a body lying on the ground, a victim of the fire. And I'm standing in the middle of the room. I can turn round. I can look at everything in the space. Odd thing to say, Vincenzo, but I wanted to say it feels incredibly real.
Yeah, it is. This is something that even the fire investigators, the senior fire investigators, have noticed. Some of them had some prejudice, some bias against this technology because it's very well known as a console, a video game tool. And as soon as they saw it, they said, I don't want to play video game. I want to do the exercise. I want to train. But then when they worn the headset on, they immediately, and this is something that always strikes me, they put their hands in their pockets. And this happens because they are trained on putting their hands in the pockets when they access the fire scene. This is needed because they have not to touch anything around. So the first layer, the first obstruction for them is actually having their hands in the pockets. But this happened when they got in the VR reconstruction. So this is a way of, let's say, tricking the brain. As soon as they had the headset on, they recognized a familiar environment, which was, for example, in this case, the fire scene, and they started acting exactly like they would act in a real scene. So looking for patterns and, of course, putting their hands in their pockets.
I mean, it's fascinating because I'm moving around the scene now and I've come up to the chair. Mm-hmm. There's several chairs, but I'm standing beside a burnt out chair. And I've stopped because there's a chair in my way. Mm-hmm. And of course, there isn't a chair in my way, it's virtual reality. But it does feel incredibly immersive and real. How did you do this? I mean, did you create this scene and then have to film it? Or how is this done in practice?
There are several ways of creating 3D environments. Usually cinema or the movie industry, video games industry, usually model everything from scratch. If we, for example, want to use these as a training tool, we need also the expertise of forensic practitioners. So in this case, we had the Danish police building these setups. This is a fire scene, so building a setup and then burning the scene in real life, to then access the scene before the actual training starts to digitalize everything. So we have a scene that is the closest thing that you can find out there, because it's created from forensic practitioners for forensic practitioners to train them. Then we injected ourselves in the scene to capture, to have this reconstruction, again, as close as possible to reality. To provide something that is repeatable, that is systematic, and that can enable probably a fairer training.
It's extraordinary. It's difficult to describe, mm-hmm, without being able to put a headset on someone listening to this, just how immersive it is. It feels literally like I'm standing in the middle of a burnt out room, and I can wander over to this side of the room and look. Actually, I can bend down and look in detail at the surface of the table. To the side, there's a shoe rack and some trainers and other bits and pieces in there that are burnt out. I can even see the detail on the Nike box that the trainers were in. I mean, it's extraordinary in its detail. And the fact that you can walk up and bend down and look at something. What are the limitations of this? I mean, can you capture any scene using this technology?
So every scene has its own challenges. In this case, we are an indoor fire scene, which means we have limitations in terms of space. We cannot walk anywhere because, especially for a scene constructed by forensic, built from by the forensic practitioners, they know exactly where they placed their evidence, their traces. So, for example, you noticed some details for the shoe boxes, but there are also like fire shots on the wall. There are also hints that can aid a forensic practitioner in this environment. So it is fundamental for us to work with them in order to provide something that is real life, similar to a case in real life. In this case, we have a fire scene. It's an indoor scene. So it was challenging to go around and use the traditional camera, the traditional photo camera that we use at the scene, in conjunction with a technique that is called photogrammetry, which takes a set of pictures and then estimates the 3D space from the normal photographs. Challenges in this environment are, for example, the different lighting conditions. You, for example, can see here a window. When facing a window in a dark environment, such as, for example, a fire scene where everything is burned, covered in ashes, it's really tough task for the camera to collect all the details from each still. But then if we have a systematic operative procedure, which is a series of operations that are carried out at the scene in order to systematically have at least an expected outcome, we can expect, again, good enough quality to allow reconstructions like these, to enable reconstructions like these. This happens in an indoor environment, but there are also outdoor scenes. For example, if we are in woodland, we might not be able to use a camera because the environment is too big or it's too bright. So we might use something different. We might use a drone, or we might completely change the method that we're using at the scene. For example, in outdoor environments, it's pretty common to use a laser scanner or LiDAR, which uses light beams, and then sampling every single light beam, catching also the color, it can reconstruct what we call a point cloud, which is a collection of points with color or any other information that we can collect. And we can visualize it in virtual reality or use it as a source for any other reconstruction that we can gather from there.
Can you take something like this? So the room I'm standing in, could an investigator stand in this room and take measurements of distances?
Absolutely. It is fundamental, though, that the scene is correctly represented and it brings the right scale. In particular, if we're using, like in this case, photogrammetry is a technique that doesn't have an intrinsic scale. So it is fundamental to bring the scale, bring the measurements from the scene with ground truth knowledge, with ground truth measurements, and scale everything accordingly. So for example, if you come closer to a table, you can actually measure the table or distances between the body and the bottle, or any other trace of evidential interest.
At the moment, Vincenzo, is this just a training exercise? Or is this able to be used in anger, in actual scenes?
So the research is currently working to validate this tool. We don't want to take this tool outside of the lab and burn it immediately. No pun intended. Currently we're using this tool for training because it's safe, because we know the limitations of the environments, and we know that giving the right context to the forensic practitioners, we are safe to use this tool. Some research papers have demonstrated that virtual reality can also be taken to the courtroom, used for example for witness interrogation, but there's still research, so we still need to assess things, for example, measurement uncertainty. If you consider these as a tool for investigative, these as an investigative tool, but also if we want to show these to a witness, we also need to assess stuff like if we want to use these as a tool to investigate, or for example, in the courtroom to question a witness, we also need to understand what's the bias that we are introducing in showing some of the images, or if we are introducing some trauma in showing, for example, things that shouldn't be shown to witnesses or family members, for example.
In the case that we're looking at, the Ard Lamont case, it's outdoors, it's in a, by the sounds of things, quite a challenging environment. You've read over some of the case. Do you think that that case could have benefited from something like being captured in this digital way? Could it have been captured in, could it be captured in this digital way?
So this is a work in progress. This is a research in progress. And it's using tools that have been used now for decades, for example, from engineers or surveyors. We are trying to bring new technologies in the field of forensic science because they meet the requirements demanded by forensic scientists and practitioners. So in a case, for example, in this case, for example, laser scanner might be useful to quickly, swiftly, but also accurately digitalize the environment. Instead of walking around and writing down on paper or sketching the area with the risk of missing something and contaminating the scene, it might be easy, for example, to bring the laser scanner at the scene and in just 30, 60 minutes, collect all the information, freezing the scene and taking these 3D photographs to, in order to come back later and visit it afterwards. But it's also useful because a laser scanner will come with the scale of the environment. So you will be walking around the real, almost a digital twin of the scene.
Of course, in the case we're looking at, some of the investigators came and took away things like bits of the rowan tree from the scene. But presumably, if you've captured it digitally, then it's preserved. Anyone can see, even if something's been removed from that scene, where it was originally.
Yeah, and this is something that we already tested in other scenarios, in fire scenes. Particularly, we were focusing on the differences between the before and after the fire. We wanted to see the impact of the fire in an indoor environment. So we digitalized the environment before the fire was set up and after the fire was put out. And we saw the differences in the environment. Something similar might be done at different stages of basically any scene. For example, if you make a scan immediately after the scene is discovered and after several days after the investigation started, you can see whether or not any of the tools, any of the traces has been removed, how the environment changed. This is also particularly interesting, for example, in outdoor environments, because if the weather doesn't really help, you can see how the scene changes throughout time. And you can see how it was presented to the first responders, to the scene of a crime officers, and how it is presented now. And this is something peculiar for this technology, because if you want, for example, come back in real life to the real scene, you're always seeing a different scene, especially if it's in an outdoor environment. But any scene suffers from contamination. It might be the weather, it might be people that are working at the scene. It might be that sometimes you cannot preserve the scene forever. So this is something that can bring value to as an investigative tool.
Any sense of how far we are off this kind of technology being used in the courtroom?
So there are, again, research papers that start to look at it, and it's probably been for 5 or 8 years that I think in Switzerland they started using this. But again, it's a setup that requires quite an open mind, especially from jurors and people working in the courtroom, especially from lay people, people that are not engineers, people that don't have a real understanding of the technology. So there are at least two things that are fundamental here. One is the technology has to be proven, and one way of doing this is through peer review of academic papers and testing. But also giving context to the people that are accessing this technology. This is fundamental, because if we give a tool to the people, they're going to use it in, let's say, creative ways, probably ways that were not initially thought from the creators of this technology. We've seen this with generative AI, when people started using it and embedding it in everything, even though they didn't really know the limitations of this technology. The same thing applies to this technology, especially because it's a technology with a huge wow factor, and it's so compelling, and the immersion and the presence that you can get when using the headset, which is something that you can't really explain. Even if you look at the scene through a traditional display of the same scene, you're not going to perceive the depth. You're not going to feel like if you were in there. And this is something that is fundamental. Give context to the people that are using it, especially to avoid the so-called CSI effect, where we think that everything is possible and technology might help. Having a beautiful hologram or 3D reconstruction of the crime scene that immediately will solve the case.